Well, welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs and the Conscious Business Show. We're here today with Michael Lisak. Very interesting background. I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation with Michael as author, entrepreneur, philosopher, speaker, and founder of the Institute for the Study of Coherence and Emergence, otherwise known as ICE. But I think what's really interesting, too, and Michael's going to have a great conversation with us today on his many activities, he was named in Worth magazine as one of Wall Street's 25 smartest players in 1999, and also as one of the 100 Americans who have most influenced how we think about money. And this was back in 2001. And there has been no moss collecting on his shoes over the past few years. And so we're very excited. Michael, thank you so much for being here with us today. Such an interesting background, certainly on business ethics, and you're certainly your latest passion of empowering victims. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because you've got a great background, your journey to this point in your life and your career, and just share with us on how the roads that you've taken and why.
Well, thanks, Darby. So the story actually begins when I'm on Wall Street. And I'm one of the people that is running the public finance department at Smith Barney. And we were doing things that we shouldn't have been doing, as was everybody else on the street.
Yeah, okay.
And I got to the point where I couldn't sleep at night. And did something that probably very few people have done, which is I decided to pick up the phone and I called the FBI.
Oh, my. Okay.
And for a year and a half, I was a friend from Florida. They did not know my name. They just knew they had somebody who was busy blowing the whistle on things.
Now, may I ask how old you were at this time that you had the foresight to do this?
Let's see. It was this 1993, so I was 36.
Okay, all right.
Now, the joy of doing this is it allowed me to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences of doing this are it cost me my marriage.
Oh, my goodness.
It cost me my career.
Mm.
And unfortunately, even though I blew the whistle on 85 Wall Street firms and Uncle Sam ended up collecting over $1 billion, Wall Street did not learn its lesson and has done the same mistake multiple times since.
Right, right.
But it set me on my quest to pursue ethics. So first I went off and got a degree from Henley in the UK, which is this lovely place where they do the crew regattas.
Oh, nice. Okay. I'd
so it's drop-dead gorgeous. And started off doing serial entrepreneur things. So I was doing my academic ventures at ICE.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of a company called WebMind that tried to build an artificial brain.
Interesting. Okay.
We then built something that is still the only search engine on the internet that allows you to enter up to 10,000 words at a time as a query. So that's called EpiSearch, E-P-I hyphen search.
Okay.
And it's probably the best academic research thing that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I also became a real estate agent because I moved to Florida. And when you move to Florida, if you are like everyone else who moves to Florida, you become a real estate agent.
Yes.
The difference is I have a strange mind. So I looked at what was going on with real estate in Florida, and I said, none of these people know how to operate the internet. And I spent a decade as probably the leading internet broker in Florida.
Really?
And I had a company called Market to Buyers that helped real estate agents develop internet leads.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay.
And we won the IT Florida Small Business of the Year Award in 2007.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, then came the Gulf oil spill, and that was the end of that business.
Oh, goodness.
Real estate agents no longer had any money to spend on anything.
Yes, yes, yes. Changed the whole economy.
However, my father passed. I moved back up to Boston in order to be around the corner from my mother.
Yeah.
And the Institute, which was doing all of its academic things, we focus on how does change happen in groups, got intrigued by what was going on at Harvard. Harvard faculty have a habit of, when they have an argument, of doing it on the front page of the Boston Globe. And the argument was about Title IX. And how do we go about making sure that sexual assault and sexual conduct happens the right way?
Mm-hmm.
And what we thought we read that Harvard was doing was trying to impose change on the students by fiat. Thou shalt do X.
Mm-hmm.
All of our research says that never works.
Right.
And we're all getting older. So we said, you know, instead of writing about it, maybe we should try doing something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is out of that that we arrived at empowering victims.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Because what we said we could do is, could we use technology, specifically the stuff that's in your phone, your smartphone technology,
mm-hmm.
to actually make a difference in the lives of some people that are affected by some nasty things?
Mm-hmm.
So our apps focus on victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, and bullying. And they're designed to actually give the poor victim of each of those things a set of tools that they wouldn't have otherwise, and give them another means back for getting their dignity back,
mm-hmm.
or as some advocates like to put it, putting them on the road from victim to survivor.
Right. So talk to us a little bit about the technology, though, when you bring that up. So in those sort of three categories, is it to have them be able to communicate, to reach out, to get nurturing? Where does that all kind of connect for them?
Actually, none of the above.
Okay.
So I will do this. I will do the assault app first, because
okay.
that's the one for sexual assault and domestic violence.
Okay.
The sad truth is that 85 to 90% of victims are not ready when something happens to talk to the appropriate authorities in any kind of a timely manner.
Okay.
The risk in that is that their story can get lost.
Right.
I don't know if you remember last summer with the whole Brock Turner mess from Stanford, where the victim's story just basically got thrown under the rug.
Right.
So what the app does, and it's called I've Been Violated, very to the point, is if you're not ready to talk to the authorities, when you get to a place that you regard as physically safe, you can talk to your phone.
Okay.
You can record your story, and what the app does is then treats it as if it was a piece of police evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So we double encrypt it, we put it in a guarded chain of custody. You could make as many of these as you wish, and then whenever it is that you are finally ready to talk to the authorities, you can go to them and say, I made these videos.
Mm, okay, very interesting. So it's not that it gets turned over to authorities, it's a secret sort of treasure chest for that person to share, hold on to when they are then ready.
Our idea is your story matters, but it needs to be told on your terms.
Correct. And that's very, very true from a victim standpoint, right? It's a violation.
You don't want to re-victimize the victim by insisting that it happen on your terms.
That's right.
It needs to happen on their terms.
Yes. No, that's an excellent distinction that not many of us think about when we hear stories like this, because it is a very personal approach. Yes.
And it's also dealing with them while they're still in the victim stage.
That's right.
So we get yelled at a lot about why we don't talk about it as a survivor app.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just happened.
Right.
And until you've talked it through a few times and come to terms with it, you haven't started down the road to survivordom.
That's right. On average, what have you seen in terms of time frame for that? I mean, when do people open up to say, I can trust this app and I can share my story? And I mean, what's sort of the healing time for them as they go through that, if there is that for them?
I don't know that there's an average. There are people that it's 3 months. There are people that it's a year. There are people that it's never.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, I also have to remind you that 68% of the victims never come forward.
Really? Oh, that's startling. In some respects, it's not surprising, but in some respects, it is. I mean, that's a horrible thing that they have to go through and kind of harness in their life. Do you, at that point, do anything additional to try to help?
What we want to do. So let me tell you where we're trying to go this year, if we can raise the money to do it.
Yes.
What the app does not have right now is a back end that links to local resources.
Oh, okay. All right.
So what we would like to do is the app should know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you finish running the app, it should say, here's how you can get to with a list of resources.
Right.
The most important of which is there are people, especially on college campuses, who by law can keep your story confidential and are immune from being subpoenaed.
Okay.
Finding those people is very difficult. If the app can get you to those people, then you have somebody you can confide in face to face without worrying that the story is going to come out when you don't want it to come out.
Right, right. Well, and managing all that, I mean, I would think the utilization of this would be high in college locations. I mean, are there a certain demographic that you've seen that has engaged in this, or is it really just across the population? There's no,
the problem,
no real answer to that.
Is a general one. Mm. We've done most of our marketing on college campuses.
Yes, okay.
But this is a general problem.
Yes. Oh, it absolutely is. Especially the whole domestic violence piece. I mean, again, you can't go through the news without hearing some atrocity or some issue that affects a family. There's always connecting points to that, which is tragic.
Now, if you have a listener that wants to help us on the domestic violence front, mm-hmm. there we have a different issue.
Okay.
We need to find a way to quote-unquote ghost the app. Having a domestic violence victim having an app on their phone called I've Been Violated is an invitation for that person to be slugged.
Yes, yes.
So what we need, and I'll give you the ideal example, let's assume that there was an app called Shopping.com that everyone used to have on their phone. If we could disguise our app inside of Shopping.com,
interesting.
Then the people that live with the assault victim would never realize that that's what was going on. But when that person needed to use it, they could open the app, type in whatever their safety word was, and it would switch over to our I've Been Violated app. And otherwise, it would just operate as the shopping app.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
So if you've got listeners that have an app that they'd like to help us with,
that's perfect.
We could use it.
in the work that you've done, not only in empowering victims, but also your incredible journey and bravery and courage that you took at a young age to say, how do I have an impact on an industry that, and I'm from the investment industry as well, which is why I've taken the path into the impact side and the conscious business world as well. Getting rid of that greed and rid of that thinking, right? But there's a fundamental edge to Wall Street, quote unquote. But you had the courage to affect change that took you down a very different path than probably what you thought was going to happen for you professionally and in your life work, into this whole world of ethics and making a difference and probably looking at companies today to say, how are they making decisions? You know, what are the principles? What are the guiding principles for these companies? What have been some of the, I guess, hurdles that you've seen maybe in companies that you've worked with, not maybe approaching sort of the conscious capitalism principles, or maybe companies that have been sort of the poster child for that? And where have you kind of seen that impact the work that you do as an entrepreneur, as someone that consults and works with businesses today on a lot of these issues?
Well, the thing that unites almost all of the stuff that I do, I have developed into a concept that I call the chasm of dissonance.
Interesting.
And the chasm of dissonance refers to the fact that a lot of us speak in shorthand.
Mm.
And shorthand works if you're an insider,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't work if you're an outsider. The only way that you can get past shorthand is with stories.
Mm-hmm.
So when people are living true narratives, the stories are fairly obvious and things resonate better. When people are telling fake narratives, they tend to go back to the shorthand,
mm-hmm.
and they tend to cause similar problems.
Mm-hmm.
So what ends up happening is, and let me give you an example. So I can think of a major hotel chain that pretends that it is highly vested in customer service.
Okay.
However, if you should make the mistake of booking your hotel room not through their reservation system but with some other vendor?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Their customer service people, when there's a problem, are unable to help you. It is against corporate policy.
Oh, interesting. Not that they can't get at the record. It's against their policy.
Right.
Okay.
So they actually, even though they have a mission statement that says customer comes first,
mm-hmm.
what they actually mean is customer who provides us this extra $2 of revenue mm-hmm. comes first, mm-hmm. and everybody else, well, we don't regard you as a customer.
Right.
Even though you're staying in our hotels, you are sleeping in one of our beds,
right.
you are using our facilities, but no, it's that extra $2 that makes all the difference.
Well, and they're having the entire customer experience or the client experience, but they're not able to even engage with them, which is, well, and to that particular institution's decision, it's to cut off communication and feedback and a sense of community with a whole other constituent. I mean, why would they make that decision? From a profitability standpoint, you think that would even be an issue?
I have challenged their senior management on this point, and they finally told me to get lost.
Well, then, all right. I guess they're not upholding to the conscious capitalism ideals of business.
But I will give you a contrast.
Yes.
So the contrast is a major phone utility, who, again, will go nameless, that had serious communication problems at the mid-level ranks with regard to customers. Their senior management, when alerted, actually cared a great deal, got deeply involved, went to find out what the problems were, discovered, much to their shock, that middle management had put nearly 30,000 customers into a black hole where they were getting no service whatsoever.
Oh, goodness.
But senior management cared and went and fixed it.
Okay.
They were actually interested in the feedback. And if you pushed on this company, you would discover that their CEO's office had a team of seven people that was there trying to respond to the people who were actually, shall we say, ambitious enough to push past whatever the mid-level was doing.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So the human nature won out. The human decision won out, which is good.
Right.
That's great. That's great. The, you know, we talked a little bit about your organization for empowering victims. What's next? I mean, you've done so much work. You've done so much in helping people, and that's got to obviously fill your heart, which is wonderful to see. What's the next step for you? What's the next mission? Idea, because you are the entrepreneur.
Well, hopefully the ideas help with what we're doing on the empowering victim side.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the middle of launching, I am in the middle of launching a new business called FISBO Facilitation.
FISBO Facilitation, okay.
So FISBO facilitators are people who are stepping into the gap between a entry-only MLS listing, which is where you pay somebody $300 so that your house is listed in the MLS,
right,
and a full service agent. FISBO facilitators work by the hour. They give you their real estate expertise as a trusted advisor without seeking a commission.
Interesting. Okay.
So we're launching. We will have a group of certified FISBO facilitators shortly, and they'll be out there to help the 10 to 20% of people who sell their homes by themselves, but who definitely could use some assistance.
Now, is this here in Massachusetts?
It'll be based out of my office in Salem.
Okay.
And, of course, any proceeds that I end up developing, I tend to turn around and go right back into empowering victims.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, this has been a great dialogue. You've got so much that's going on, Michael. What's the best way for people to reach out, get in connection with you?
The most important thing, empoweringvictims.org, just like it sounds, empowering victims, victims.org. That
Wonderful.
Is the best way.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. This is Radio Entrepreneurs and the Conscious Business Show. We'll be back with you after the few spots from our sponsors. Thank you.